Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Okay, I want you to imagine something for me. You're 19 years old. You've left home in Alabama, left your mom, left everything familiar, because you want to see the world. You want adventure. You want to find out who you are outside of the small town you grew up in. So you start hitchhiking, because that's a great idea. Traveling. Moving from city to city, picking up, you know, odd jobs, sending letters home to your mom so she knows that you're okay. And then one day in January 1935, you walk in to a hotel in Kansas City, Missouri, well-dressed, calm, no luggage except a comb and a toothbrush. And you ask for an interior room several floors up, a room that faces the courtyard, not the street, and a room where nobody outside can see in. Okay, why though? Right? Now, 2 days later, the bellboy finds you on your hands and knees in a blood-soaked room. Naked. Bound at the wrists, ankles, and neck. Stabbed multiple times in the chest. And a punctured lung, a fractured skull, and somehow through it all, still alive, barely, when they find you. And when the detective leans down and asks you, who did this to you? You look at him and say you fell against the bathtub. What? You are actually protecting whoever did this to you with your last breath, and then you die. And nobody, not the Kansas City Police Department, not the FBI, not the hundreds of people who investigated this case over the next 90 years, has ever figured out who was in that room with you, or why, or what you were running from, or what you knew, for that matter. So this is the story of Room 1046, and it is one of the most haunting, layered, bizarre, unsolved cases in American history. There is literally, and I am not exaggerating, my fellow creepers, there is literally a 5-inch thick police file on this case. The hotel still stands. The room still exists, and the case is still open to this day. Welcome to Creepy Shit. Go grab your favorite bevy, cozy up, and let's get into this. All right, so let's start at the very beginning. It's January 2nd, 1935 in Kansas City, Missouri. A young man walks into the hotel president in downtown Kansas City at around 1:20 in the afternoon. The hotel is a prestigious establishment right in the heart of the city's Power and Light District, where the nightclub scene was thriving and organized crime frankly ran the show. I mean, let's just call a spade, right? This is Prohibition era Kansas City. The city is run by political boss, Tom Pendergast. Corruption is institutional. And the hotel knows this. The staff knows this. And they are trained to ask very few questions about their guests. The young man is well-dressed, dark overcoat, clean clothes. He carries no luggage, just a black comb, a black hairbrush, and a tube of toothpaste. That's it. He asks for a room on a high floor, interior facing. He specifically does not want a window that faces the street. He pays for one night in advance in cash, and when the desk clerk asks him his name, he says, Roland T. Owen, Los Angeles, California. The bellboy, Randolph Probst, walks him up to the room 1046 on the 10th floor. On the way up, Roland complains about the prices at the neighboring, I'm not sure if I'm going to say it right. I think it's a Malbach Hotel, where he'd apparently stayed the night before. So he says that the $5 nightly rate was just too high. Props thinks, you know, nothing of it, opens the room, and he leaves. And that's the last normal moment of this entire story, you guys. Because here is what the hotel staff started noticing over the next 2 days. Roland, almost never turned the lights on. Okay, that's weird. The mauled Mary Soptic Mary Soptic went to clean the room the following morning and found him sitting inside in almost complete darkness. Shades drawn, one dim table lamp on. She cleaned around him. He told her a friend was coming to visit and asked her not to lock the door when she left. When she came back 4 hours later with fresh towels, she found him lying fully clothed on top of his unmade bed, seemingly like asleep. But she knocked and came back later because she felt off, which I get it. Like, girl, I'd be like, you know what? I'm just going to let you do your thing. I'm not going to disturb you. Totally understandable. Now, that same evening, she returned again. This time she knocked. From inside the room, a voice, not Roland's voice, loud, deep, gruff, a voice she'd never heard before, said they didn't need any towels. Now, the maid stood in the hallway, knew there were no towels in that room, and she had taken them herself that morning. There was someone in that room who did not want that door opened. You know this is going to get so freaking creepy. Okay. So here's what we know about the night of January 3rd going into January 4th, 1935. And I want to be clear that everything I'm about to tell you comes from documented police statements, newspaper accounts, and the official Kansas City Police Department case file. A woman called the hotel president that night asking what Roland T. Owen looked like. She told the desk clerk he lived in Clinton, a town about 50 miles outside Kansas City. Nobody knows who she was. Okay, that's weird. Now, the guest in room 1048, right next door to 1046, was a woman named Jean Owen. No relation. Okay, none. She'd come to Kansas City to shop and decided to stay the night rather than drive home. She told the police that late that night, she heard repeated noise from the direction of room 1046. Men and women talking loudly, cursing. She almost called the front desk, but decided not to. An elevator operator named Charles Blotcher reported a woman coming into the hotel late that night searching for a man in room 1026. This woman searched for over an hour on multiple floors. He said she was about 5.5 feet tall, roughly 135 pounds. She was never officially identified. Okay, now this is... I'm telling you, there are so many layers to this story. An elevator... Okay. At some point during that night, something happened in room 1046 that left the walls, the ceiling, the bed, the bathroom covered in blood. At 7 a.m. on January 4th, the phone in 1046 was off the hook. The switchboard operator flagged it. Props went up. He knocked. A low, gruff voice, the same voice the maid had heard, said, "Come in. Turn on the lights." So, props went in, right? The voice he heard wasn't Roland, but Roland was the only one in the room. What? Props thought that he looked pale, like he had been drinking. Left without thinking anything more of it. Like, okay, he's probably just kind of drunk, maybe hungover. Okay, fine. At 11 a.m., the phone was off the hook again. Props went back up, knocked. No answer this time. He let himself in. And what he walked into, I want you to understand that this bellboy was maybe 20 years old, okay? And what he walked into was Roland T. Owen on his hands and knees, head in his hands, naked, covered in blood, stab wounds across his chest, blood on the walls, blood on the ceiling, blood soaked into the sheets, and blood in the bathroom. I don't like this, and honestly, I'm not going to lie to you right now. I'm feeling a little lightheaded as I talk about this because I'm getting a very vivid image, and I don't like it. I don't. I'm just saying it.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, the room had been stripped, okay? So no clothes, no comb, no toothbrush, no toothpaste. The only things that police found were an unlit cigarette, a label from a tie, and four fingerprints on the phone stand, likely female. And at this point, Roland is still alive. The plot thickens, my friends. So this is the part that really, really gets me, like, every single time. Because they get Roland to a hospital. He is barely conscious and holding on for dear life, okay? A detective leans over him and asks, "Who did this to you?" And Roland T. Owen, with a punctured lung, a fractured skull, and stab wounds across his chest, looks at that detective and says he fell against a bathtub. Dude, no, you didn't. Like, I would be like, no, you didn't. Like, so the detective pushes, right? Because I would too. Like, who else was in the room? Nobody, Roland says. Nobody else was there. He protected whoever did this to him with what were essentially his last coherent words. Whether that was out of loyalty, fear, dare I say love, because I don't think it is, or some combination, we are never going to know on that, because Roland T. Owen slipped into a coma shortly after and died just after midnight on January 5th, 1935. The coroner ruled it as a homicide. The investigation began, and the first thing they discovered was that Roland T. Owen did not exist. So that's weird. Like, my first thing is like, holy shit, is this like a ghost? Like, did this ghost like check in to this hotel and like play out this whole thing? Like, is this like some form of like crazy energy, like aspiration energy? Like, maybe, I don't know, but let's find out. So there is no record of anyone by that name at this time anywhere in the United States. The man in room 1046 had checked in under a totally fabricated identity. So obviously, you know, like his clothes were real, his belongings were real, his real name, gone. Just a dead young man in Kansas City Hospital with a face nobody recognized and a name nobody could verify. So now, here is where this case goes from a terrible, like, murder story to something genuinely haunting. 11 weeks after the murder, with the body still unclaimed in the Kansas City funeral home, police announced they were going to bury the man in a pauper's grave, a potter's field. The burial of the unknown and the unclaimed is pretty much what that equates to. But then the phone rang, okay? And an anonymous caller told the detective to bury him in Memorial Park Cemetery. I'll pay for it, they say. Okay, weird. Like, who's calling, please? And the caller said Owen hadn't played the game fair, and cheaters usually get what's coming to them, and they hung up. Oh! Ah, I've got goosebumps. Okay. The funeral was paid for by this anonymous person, and at the gravesite, flowers arrived. The arrangement signed simply "Love Forever, Louise." Nobody named Louise was ever identified in the connection with this case. What? So the body was buried, the case went cold, and months passed. Is this not so fucking bizarre? Like, this is so bizarre. And then Ruby Ogletree, a woman in Birmingham, Alabama, was shown a copy of a magazine featuring a photograph of the dead man from room 1046, and she recognized the scar on his head. Not Harry Potter, by the way. A burn scar from childhood accident involving hot grease when he was 11 years old. So, like, she knew him and knew what had happened to him. And this is so, like, I just can't with this story. So the man in room 1046, get this. This is going to fucking blow your mind because it blew mine. It was her son. So this is the mom who finds her son on the cover of a fucking magazine and finds out that he's dead. Like, what? So his name was Artemis Ogletree. He was 19 years old. He had left home in April 1934 to travel the country and had been sending her handwritten letters regularly. Until the letters stopped coming in, his handwriting, and started arriving typed. So, holy shit, is this thorough. Like, whoever murdered him, because honestly, let's be honest, this is a murder. Like, holy cow. Like, wanted to cover it up so badly that they typed letters to his mom. Dude, the karma on that is going to be unbelievable. So wrote it from different cities, claiming he was in France, in Cairo, that he was fine and everything was going great. And that he even saved a man named Godfrey Jordan from a band of thugs. Like, what? So the letters kept coming for months after her son was already dead and buried. And someone was writing to his mother, impersonating him after killing him. Ruby Ogletree wrote to the State Department, to custom authorities, to American consulate, I can talk, in Cairo, to the FBI. And in January of 1936, so a full year after her son's murder, she wrote directly to President Franklin Roosevelt, begging for help finding her boy. She had no idea he was already gone, which is so sad. Like, I feel so bad for his mom. Like, if that was her only son, like, for real? And this is how you find out. Oh, so not cool. So, okay, here's what we know, because there's some unanswered questions here, right? So here's what we know for certain. And all of this is documented. So Artemis Ogletree was 19 years old. He was from Birmingham, Alabama. He had been traveling across the country for months before checking into the hotel president under a false name. He had also used at least one other false name of Eugene K. Scott at the neighboring Malbach Hotel the night before. Someone named Don was in contact with him throughout his stay. The maid heard a man's voice in the room. The voice was not Artemis. Hotel staff saw a man and a woman leaving the 10th floor in a hurry the morning that Artemis was found. Someone paid for his funeral anonymously and told police he hadn't played the game fair. Someone sent roses to his grave, signed Louise. Someone wrote letters to his mother for months after his death, impersonating him, keeping her from reporting him missing, keeping her from identifying him. And Artemis Ogletree himself dying with every reason in the world to give up whoever had done this to him and chose not to. That's the part that I am just baffled on. Like, dude, you're probably not going to make it and you're not going to, like, and you wouldn't give it up. Like, that's... Man, you want to talk about the fear. Now, granted, he is 19 years old. He's young. So, you know, the fear is strong, maybe? I'm not sure. So the Kansas City Police Department has a 5-inch thick case on this. The case is still officially open. The hotel still stands. It's now the Hilton President in downtown Kansas City. Room 1046 still exists on the 10th floor. Nobody has ever been charged. Nobody has ever been identified. Don and Louise remain two of the most persistent mysteries in American true crime history. Is that not wild? I think that is just wild. So, let's get into a little bit of the haunting, because this is true crime, but there, of course, there's a haunting because it's creepy shit, and that's what I do. So I want to tell you something else before we close this out, because you know, we love to go all the way on this. So the Hilton president in Kansas City has a reputation, believe it or not. Staff and guests have reported unexplained activity on the 10th floor for decades. There have been cold spots, doors opening on their own, the feeling of being watched in the hallway outside of room 1046, and a figure reported in the room itself. Whew, I don't know. Now, whether you believe in any of this or not, here is what is undeniably true. A 19-year-old boy did check into that room, and he was absolutely tortured and killed and protected his killer with his dying breath. His mother spent over a year writing letters to presidents and consultants and everything, trying to find a son who was already buried in a cemetery in a city that she'd never been to. And someone who knew exactly what happened in that room sent roses to his grave, signed Louise. Now, you know, I know, we know that kind of unresolved grief, that kind of unanswered violence, I don't know what it leaves behind exactly, but it leaves something. And we can feel it when we walk into a room. I know I have for sure in many different cases when I actually do get a chance to get out from behind the desk of my research and just go check it out. Like, you can feel that stuff 100%. So if you want to go deeper on this, and I know you just might, and this is part of the summer series, so this is a good road trip and a place to stay. The Kansas City Magazine published an extensive deep dive called The Owen Case, written by Martin Sismar, that includes access to the original police files, the letters, and documents that had never been made public before. That article, I can link it in the show notes for you. And if for some reason at the time of this recording I get sidetracked and I forget, call me out on that shit. I don't mind, as long as you're nice about it. I only have one boundary. Don't be a dick, okay? So, but if I forget, be like, yo, Star, you gotta give me that link. And I'll be like, yeah, girl, or guy, I got you. So, yes, I will do my very best to make sure that I link that in the show notes for you, because the Kansas City Public Library also has archived newspaper coverage going back to January of 1935 that is publicly accessible. So you can get that. And if you find yourself in Kansas City, the Hilton president is right there in the Power and Light District. Room 1046 is on the 10th floor. I'm not telling you to go stay in it. I'm just saying it's there. Okay. And even if you don't stay in that room specifically, which I do know that it is one of the most requested rooms, definitely go check it out. I would love to know what you feel, what you experience, what you find, because you know what they say, sometimes the creepiest shit is also the truest. All right, you guys, let me know what you think. Hope you guys have a good rest of the day. I will catch you next week. And P.S., I also just want to give you a little heads up that through the rest of July, we've got the summer series that will end at the end of this month. And then we're going to have a 2-week hiatus because this mama bear has to get kiddos ready for school, but I also have to start doing more research. So it's going to be research time for about a 2-week period where I literally every moment of every day is literally spent researching. So it's in between clients. It's at nighttime when I'm laying in bed. It's in the early mornings when I start waking up at 4 a.m. and do 2 hours of research every single day. I shit you not. So just to give you a little insider's perspective. Now, if you want to go ahead and follow me over on Instagram, please do. It is Creepy Shit Podcast. If you want to email anything to me, whether you have a fan requested episode, a listener's tale that you want to share with me, I love hearing those. Email me over at creepyshitpodcastofficial@gmail.com. All right, you guys, I'll catch you next week. Okay, bye.
McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.